Today's shiur is Masechta Makos Daf Gimel, and we will begin on Daf Beis Amud Beis, three lines from the bottom of Shemar Kiva Amru. We had learned in our previous shiur that the Gemara had mentioned a number of situations where, even though the Torah says regarding Edom Zomim, Vasisim Loik Hashem Zomim Lasis Lachiv, that the Edom received a punishment that they wanted to make the person they accused received. The Mishnah, the Gemara gave a number of exceptions. Rabbi Kiva spoke about a case where the Edom Zomim alone confessed that they were Edom Zomim. Rabbi Kiva said that in those circumstances we don't do Vasisim like Kasha Zomim Lasis La'achiv. Asked the Gemara, my time of Rabbi Kiva, what is the basis of Rabbi Kiva's ruling? Says the Gemara, Kesavar, because Rabbi Kiva is of the opinion that Knosahu, the payment that Edom Zomim, or the punishment that Edom Zomim receive, is a Knas, and there's a rule that Knas Eim Shama Piatzmai. A person doesn't have to pay a fine based on his own admission. In fact, the Mefarshim explain that we find in the Torah that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks Adam Harishon, Hamin ho eitz asher tzivisicha levilta me'echa v'menu achalta, he asked Adam Harishon, did you eat from the tree I told you not to eat? What was HaKadosh Baruch Hu trying to accomplish? What HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to do was get Adam to admit that he had done an Aveira. Because as we're learning now in our Gemara, somebody who's Maida B'Knas, if somebody admits that they did it in Aveira, the halach is they don't get punished. And that's why we wanted to accomplish that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to get Noach, Adam, to admit that he did an Aveira. In fact, the Mefarshim go on to explain, the Shalah says this, that now we can understand why Yom Kippur is considered a Yontif. What is the Yontif of Yom Kippur? The answer is that Yom Kippur represents a day where a person says vidui. That's the main part of doing tshuva. And as we're learning now, doing tshuva and saying vidui brings a person to be in a category of Moed B'Knas Potter, and that's why Yom Kippur is considered a Yontif. Continues the Shalah to explain. But even though we're saying the Moed B'Knas is Potter, let's say somebody did an Aveira, which has two parts to it, two parts of the punishment. That he has to pay the Keren, he has to pay the principal, he also has to pay a Knas. Certainly, just because the Aloch of Moed B'Knas is Potter, doesn't take away the obligation to pay the principal. And he explains that's exactly how Yom Kippur works. The Knas is taken away by the person saying vidui, but the Keren for the person doing an Aveira, how is that taken care of? That is resolved by the person having fasting in Yom Kippur. That takes away that element of his sin. So says the Gemara, that's why Rabbi Kiva in our case holds that the person is potter. The person is potter because he's a moed b'knas. These Edom Zomim. Amar Rava. So Rava brings a proof that Edom Zomim is considered a knas. Shirei lo also maisa v'naragim mishamim. If we look at every situation of Edom Zomim, they haven't actually done anything. All they did was offer this false testimony, and yet they're punished. So we clearly see that Edom Zomim is only a knas. Rav Nachman brings another raya. Teida, shirei mamim biyad balim. If Edom Zomim came and said that Reuven owes Shimon money, and then they turn out to be Edom Zomim, so Reuven didn't have any financial loss because Reuven didn't really owe Shimon any money. And yet, the halacha is, nobody had any financial loss. And yet, the Edom Zomim, because of the onish of Kasha Zomim, Lasis La'achiv, have to pay what they wanted to cause the person that they said false testimony about to lose. There's actually an interesting question based on this Gemara. we learned in our previous shiur that one of the fundamental halachas of Eidim Zomim is that Vasisim Kasher Zomim Lasis Lachav V'loi Kasher Osa. Meaning that if a Bezdin not only accepted the testimony of the Eidim Zomim, but acted based on that testimony, and then it turns out that these Eidim are Eidim Zomim, the halacha is that they don't, that they, the din of Eidim Zomim will not, the din of Eidim Zomim will not apply. The question that the Miri and other Rishonim discuss is what will be the halacha in by Dine Mominus? Does the same rule apply that we say Vasisim Loi Kasher Zomam Loi Kasher Osa? Says the Miri, and he uses Al Gemara as one of his rayas, that from here we see that by Dine Mominus, even if they pay, even if the Bezdin already paskined, the halacha will be that the din of Eidim Zomim will pay. Because Al Gemara shows us, says the Meiri, that Dine Mominus is considered a different, this piece of Gemara that we just learned from Rav Nachman, that Dine Mominus is considered somewhat different. The only question that the Achroinim debate is, and the reason is, because Dine Mominus could always be reversed, meaning as follows. Let's think about it. If Eidim Zomim said that Reuven is chayiv misa, and now Bezdin, based on that false testimony, it administered the misa, that isn't reversible. However, by Dine Mominus, it's reversible. That, let's say, Bezdin, based on the false testimony of these Eidim Zomim, made Reuven pay Shimon, and then it turned out that they were Eidim Zomim, Shimon could always return the money to Reuven. So therefore, there is no reason, explain the Rishonim, to differentiate by Dine Mominus between a situation of Kasher Zomam versus a situation of Kasher Osa. The question that comes up, and this is a Machlokes or a Naftali and the Pnei Yeshua, that let's say it's a situation of a financial payment which is not reversible. How do we understand this halacha? Do we say that Dine Mominus are treated differently than all other cases, and the din of Kasher Zomim V'loi Kasher Osa doesn't apply by Dine Mominus? That's one way of explaining. Or only in a case where it's not where it's reversible, will we say that halacha. Here, where it's not reversible, we'll treat Dine Mominus like all other situations. Says the Gemara, my need the lawyer Samaisa. What's the main point of Rav Nachman saying? That they haven't done anything, because the rightful owners are still holding on to the money. Ask the Gemara, isn't that the same point that Rava made? So what is Rav Nachman hinder the Rava? What is Rav Nachman saying different than Rava? Answers the Gemara, Eimer, the way to understand the Gemara is V'chein Amar Rav Nachman. And the way the Mefarshim explained the Gemara is as follows. It's not that Rav Nachman was just repeating what he heard from Rava. We can't assume that that was what Rav Nachman was doing. Rather, what happened here was that Rav Nachman said, Rava said one explanation, Rav Nachman said another explanation, and the Gemara, when it then examines the two explanations they give, recognizes that they're both essentially saying the same thing. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Marav, Eid Zomim Mishal Fi Chalkai, and Eid Zomim pays according to his share. Ask the Gemara, my Mishal Fi Chalkai, what does that mean? Ilaim the Hai Mishal Palga, the Hai Mishal Palga, that it means that let's say we have two Eidim, and they turn out to be Eidim Zomim, and because they turn out to be Eidim Zomim, we now punish them that they each have to pay whatever they wanted to cause the loss, and they'll each pay their share. That means if they wanted to cause a loss of $100, and we had two Eidim Zomim, each one will pay $50. Ask the Gemara, Tanina, that's an explicit Mishnah that we're going to learn on Daf Hei, that Mishal Shem B'Momin Ve Mishal Shem B'Malkus, that we have Eidim Zomim, that we divide up the payment amongst the Eidim Zomim. So what is Rabbi Yehuda Marav teaching us that we haven't learned in the Mishnah? The Rashi explains what does the word Mishal Shem mean. So there's two explanations. One explanation of Mishal Shem means that we divide it up amongst the Eidim. So if there are two Eidim, we divide it up amongst two Edom. And if there are three Edom, we'll divide it up amongst three Edom. Mishalshim, we divide it up amongst the eight, we divide it up. Another pshat is Mishalshim refers back to the Dayonim. Mishalshim, the Dayonim, determine how much they'll have to pay based on what they wanted to cause a loss to the person that they accused falsely. Ella, says the Gemara, the case that Rav is referring to, it's an interesting question based on what we, the Rishonim ask, based on what we discussed actually in our previous year. We discussed in the previous year that is Kufra, if somebody's animal killed someone, is that, and the Torah says that under those circumstances he has to pay kaifer, is kufra mamayna, is it a mamon obligation or is it kapara? So say the Rishonim, certainly if we hold that kufra is a mamon obligation, so that obligation is divided up amongst the Edom Zomim. The question that comes up amongst the Rishonim is, according to the opinion that we discussed in the previous year, that kufra is a kapara. So now what will be the halacha? Will we say that each of the Edom Zomim need a kapara, and the only way they can achieve a kapara is if they pay the entire amount? Or do we say that it's still considered that we divide up, since it's a financial payment, we divide up that obligation amongst the Edom Zomim? So the question again now is, what is Rabbi Yehuda Merav teaching us that we haven't learned in the Mishnah? Says the Gemara, it's talking about a case kigoyin de itzim chad minayu, the one, only one of the Edom Zomim was turned into Eid Zomim. That Rabbi Yehuda Merav teaches us that he pays his share. The Mishalim palga de day. Ask the Gemara, umi Mishalim, is that indeed the halacha? Don't we know Vatanya ain't Eid Zomim Mishalim Mamon Achi Zumishneim? There is no din of Edom Zomim unless both of them are Muslim. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rava, the case that Rav Yehuda Merav is referring to is a situation Ba'omer Eidish Sheker Ha'adati, where he says, I testified falsely. Only one of them says that, and not the other aid. And therefore, only the aid who admits, who confesses that he testified falsely, he will have to pay his share. Ask the Ritva, how could somebody say such a testimony? Don't we have halacha that ain't other mason atzmai rasha? So the Rishash says a very big chiddush. Rishash says that even though there's a halacha of ain't other mason atzmai rasha, that is only in a case where the person is not doing it because he wants to do tshuva. But in a case where the person's goal is to do tshuva, there is no concern of ain other meisim atzmai rasha. The Ritva says that this would be a situation of palgid and debura. We won't accept his testimony regarding the fact that he says that he's a rasha, that he was an eid zomim, but we do accept his testimony regarding his financial obligation, and that isn't considered a situation, therefore, of any other mates from Russia. Ask the Gemara, how can we trust a person? How do we allow such a thing to happen? Do we allow a person to say that he lied? Kol kmine, don't we have a rule, gekimin shigit shavein achayzer magid, that once a person says testimony, he cannot change his testimony? So how can we trust him over here? How will we accept his testimony that he lied? And the Rishonim debate, why is there a halacha of kivin sheigit shavein achayzer magid? Some explain it's a gzeiras hakosef. Others explain that the Torah says, the Ritva explains it this way, that the Torah says that apishnei edim yakum dover. The Torah gives incredible power to edim. Now, if edim could always retract, how could the Torah give this power to edim if they could always change their mind? The Beis Yosef says, based similar to what we just discussed a moment ago, if the halacha would be that somebody, that Edom could always retract their edus, then we're going to have a situation, says the Beis Yosef, of Ein Adam Meis Matzmarasha, where a person first will say, one testimony and then change his mind, and he will essentially be saying that I previously lied, and we know that halacha is that ain't adam meisim atzmo rasha. Another explanation is that I saw as follows. The Torah speaks about the parasha of a carbon shvuas ha'edis. A carbon shvuas ha'edis refers to a situation where, let's say, someone said, somebody approaches someone and says, "You know testimony on my behalf," and then the person swears falsely that he does not, and then he confesses. The halacha is that he has to bring a carbon. Now, a carbon shvuas ha'edus. Now, were the halacha to be that a person could always change his mind, then why would there ever be an obligation, or why would there ever be a parasha of carbon shvuas ha'edus? It must be that we kiven shehigid shuv einachayz romagid. A person cannot retract on his testimony. So again, what the Gemara is looking for, the Gemara is looking for a case where what is the chiddush of what Rav Yehuda ben Rav said, that eid zaymim mishalom lefi chalkai. Ella, it's referring kmat el ba'aymer, is referring to a situation where he comes and says ha'adnu v'zamnu bebezdin, where he comes and says I was already turned into eid zaymim in such and such bezdin. And Rabbi Yehuda ben Rav is teaching us that, let's say we have two eidim. One eid makes this declaration, and the other eid does not make this declaration. The halacha will be the eid that made the declaration will have to pay. Ask the Gemara, this doesn't follow what we learned as being the opinion of Rabbi Kiva at the beginning of our shir. Command the white Rabbi Kiva. Because the Ikar Rabbi Kiva, Omer, didn't Rabbi Kiva teach us at the beginning of the shir, that's ein mishalom al pi atzmai, that somebody who's a maida b'knas doesn't have to pay. So if these eidim, if this person is admitting that he's an eid zoymim because of what happened in the Bezdin, that's a situation of maida b'knas. Why would he have to pay? Elo, says the Gemara, referring not just that he said that I was an eid zoymim in that Bezdin, I was found to be an eid zoymim in that Bezdin, but it was more than that. But oima ha'adnu v'zamnu b'bezdin plaini, we set testimony in that Bezdin where we would turn into eidim zoymimim v'chuyavnu mamon, and we were obligated to pay. Once they were obligated to pay, now it's already a financial obligation, and we don't have a situation here anymore of a moida b'knas. He's a moider and a chiyuv mamon. Somebody who's obligated to pay certainly will have to pay. That's not considered a moider b'knas. It's considered like a hadas baldin kamei edim. There's a very interesting machlokes achronim. What would be the halacha if aid walks in and says, the case of Al-Gamar, I declare to be aid zoymim in such and such bezdin. And not only was I declared to be such an eid zoymim and such bezdin, bezdin obligated me to pay. Will he have to? But he adds, so Al-Gamar says clearly he'll have to pay. But what happens if, besides saying that, he also says, but the whole story was incorrect and I am indeed innocent? What would be the halacha? So some achronim say that this is a classic case of Pesha Asa Peshitter. We only know that he's Eid Zaymim because of his admission, where at the same time that he's making this admission, he's also saying that I was innocent, and therefore he would not have to pay. However, there are other Achroinim that disagree and say that once there's a Psak of Bezdin that he's obligated to pay, it's too late to say Pesha Asa Peshitter. So now what he's saying, going back to Al-Gamar is saying that Yehuda Merav is referring to a situation where a person admitted that he was declared a zoymim in another Bezdin and Bezdin paskined that he has to pay. Now only one of these two Edim make this admission, this confession, not the other. Says Rav, Rav Yehuda ben Rav, that he has to pay according to his share. So what is the chiddush? Because Salkadat the Chemina, we might have thought, Kivin the Lechavrei, Le Matzim Chayvlei, since the other aid, who's not making this confession, will not have to pay. Maybe he shouldn't have to pay either, because as we learned earlier in our shir, Eidim Zomim always travel together. Kamash Malon, that halacha no longer applies, and once they were obligated to pay, then the halacha of Elam Ein Echom and Eidim Nasa Zomim Achiyeu Shneim Zomim V'loi Mishalim Achiyeu Shneim Mishalim doesn't anymore play once Beis Din already paskin that they're obligated to pay. The halacha is that when a man marries a woman, he's mechuyev to write to her a ksuba. And the rule of a ksuba is that if the husband will die before his wife or divorce her, the halacha is that he has to pay the ksuba. If she dies before him, he doesn't have to pay the ksuba. Says the Mishnah, Me'idim onus ish ploini. If two edim come in and say that we say testimony that this person giris is ishtoi, divorced his wife, v'loi nasan la ksubasa, and didn't pay her ksuba. And there's a machlokes of Aruch Lener and Pnei Yeshua how to learn this Mishnah. The Pnei Yeshua explains the Mishnah that it's not just that they're saying that we know that the man divorced his wife, but part of the testimony has to include that we know that the ksuba wasn't paid. Because if they don't include that in the testimony, they can always successfully, says the Pnei Yeshua, argue that we were only coming to say that this woman is not a nacious ish, that this woman is allowed to marry anyone. We weren't focused on the ksuba portion of what happens when a husband divorces his wife. And therefore explains the Pnei Yeshua that our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the Edom not only say that we know that this husband divorced his wife, part of what these Edom Zomim are saying is, and we know that he didn't pay the ksuba. And it turns out that they weren't saying the truth. Aruch Haner disagrees. The Aruch Haner says that a ksuba and a divorce travel together. And by them saying that the husband divorced his wife, it's understood that now he has an obligation to pay the ksuba, and therefore if they turn out to be liars, they turn out to be Edom Zomim, Kasha Zomim calls that they have to make compensation. So again, says the Mishnah, Midim Anus Ish Ploini, Shizgiris Is Ishtai, V'loi Nosin L'Ksubasa. Says the Mishnah, V'loi Bein Hayoyim Bein L'Mochus Soif L'Itin L'Ksubasa. Actually, a husband may anyway have to pay the ksuba if he dies before his wife or he divorces his wife. So were they causing him a loss or not? How do we make that determination? Says the Mishnah. Every ksuba has a value, and the Gemara is going to explain this at greater length. And that is deducted from the amount that the ksuba, the amount that the Edom Zomim have to pay versus the face value of the ksuba. Ask the Rishonim, but there's another loss that these Edom Zomim were trying to create. The halacha we know is that a husband has to supply his wife with she'eroi ksusa v'enosa. He has to support her and clothe her. And by them saying that the husband divorced his wife, they are creating a situation that that the husband doesn't have to support his wife. So isn't that a loss for the wife? Why doesn't our Mishnah discuss that loss at all? So some explain that our Mishnah is referring, as we learned in Masechet Ksubos, to a situation where the woman, the halacha is that the husband has to support his wife, and in return, the wife has to give the husband whatever she earns. But let's say the wife says, I will keep my earnings and you don't have to support me. She has every right to do so. And that is the case of our Mishnah. Another way that the Rishonim explain is that our Mishnah is referring to a situation where the woman is indeed making a claim that she's divorced, and she brings these Edom Zomim to support this false claim. Since the Edom Zomim are supporting a claim, so she is indeed indicating that she's divorced and she's not entitled to share ksus v'nasai. So it's not their testimony that's creating the situation that she should lose the share ksus v'nasai. It's her very own claim. that they're just supporting, and therefore the Mishnah isn't focused on Sherek Susav Anasa. Before, the Gemara asks, Kama Shomim. So the Mishnah referred to making an evaluation, and the Gemara wants to know how is this evaluation made. And actually, there are two ways of understanding how such an evaluation can be made. One is, as I explained when we learned the Mishnah, every woman is entitled to ksuba payment. But she's only entitled to the ksuba payment if her husband divorces her or her husband dies before her. So let's say we have a married woman who wants to sell a ksuba. She could sell it, but it's a great risk for anyone to buy this ksuba, because it will only be collectible if the husband dies before her or divorces her. And therefore, if she were to try to sell this ksuba, albeit it may have a value, it's at a great discount from the face value. That's one point. Another issue is that every husband, again, this was in the time of the Gemara, had to designate a piece of property. That piece of property would be there for the husband, for the wife to collect her ksuba. If a husband were to sell that piece of property, and the halacha is that piece of property, the peiros, whether it's rented or produces produce, belong to the husband, and then if he dies or divorces her, that property goes to her. If she dies before him, it remains with him. A husband has a right to sell that property also, with the buyer recognizing that it is possible that he may lose that property if the husband divorces or dies before the wife. But certainly, which is a more valuable sale? So the Rishonim all explain that the second sale is considered a much more valuable sale, because the buyers are receiving a piece of property, and that, so they already have something concrete in their hand. And not only are they receiving something concrete in their hand, the payers of that property, they certainly will enjoy unless the husband dies before the wife divorces her. Whereas, if somebody buys a ksuba from a woman, he has nothing from that piece of paper, and he may never have anything from that piece of paper if the wife dies before the husband. So now the question is, when our Mishnah asked the Gemara, spoke about making an evaluation, but deducting, what is deducted from the ksuba value? The amount that the husband would get for selling this piece of property designated for the ksuba, or the amount the wife would get for selling the haksuba? Amar Rav Chisda Babal, we make the evaluation in the husband, from the husband's position, from the amount that he would get for selling the property. Rav Nosson Bar Oishi Amar B'Isha, we look at the amount that the woman would have received if she would have sold her ksuba during her lifetime, and that's the amount that's deducted from the ksuba, because just like somebody else could buy the ksuba from the wife, so too could the husband buy back the ksuba from his wife, and therefore that amount is deducted, according to this opinion, from the value of the ksuba that the eidim must now pay the husband. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger discusses, how could a husband sell a ksuba? The halacha we learned in Masechet Baba Metzia is that someone, that a husband, that a yorish, sorry, cannot sell a portion of his father's estate, was saying, because since I am a yorish, so why here does a wife have the ability to sell her ksuba? So he explains that in the case of Yerusha, until the father passes away, there is absolutely no obligation, and the child has absolutely no rights in his father's estate. Whereas here, although she isn't entitled to collect until her husband dies or divorces her, she does have that obligation already exists from the moment that the marriage took place, and that's why such a sale would be valid. Amra Papa, Beisha or Beksubasa. When we say that we have a right, that we deduct the value, we only deduct the value of the ksuba, which means as follows. The halacha is that a woman who brings into the marriage Nichsi Malug, The halacha is that the peiris of that those nechsim alug, the husband eats. So the question is, if these edim, by saying that the husband, by falsely saying that the husband divorced his wife, wanted to deprive the husband of his rights to the nechsim alug, so maybe that too should be taken into consideration in what the edim have to pay him. For that, the Gemara says that the edim could successfully claim that we weren't aware about of these nechsim alug, and since we weren't aware of these nechsim alug, they should not be obligated to pay for them. Rav Moshe uses this Gemara in the valuation system that this Gemara discusses to discuss a very interesting question. He says many stocker organizations, yeshivas, have different types of lotteries. And the question is, if somebody buys a lottery, can he use Maisa money for buying that lottery ticket? So Moshe says that there are two types of lottery tickets. One is where the yeshiva who's selling the tickets don't have a specific amount of tickets that they're selling. They don't have a specific date on which the drawing will take place. Such tickets, he says, certainly you could use Maisa money for. But in a situation where there is a specific date when the drawing will take place, and there are a certain amount of tickets that will be sold, says Rav Moshe, we have to make an evaluation. How much, if I bought such a ticket, would somebody be willing to pay for that ticket? That amount is deducted as the value of the ticket, and the rest can be considered Maisa money. But Rav Moshe goes on to say that let's say somebody used Maisa money to buy a ticket, and then afterwards he won the lottery, so he has to give back to Maisa the amount that he spent, unless the amount that he spent is worth more than the prize that he won. Says the Mishnah, Meidim Anubish Pliny, if Edom come and say testimony about a person, Shuchayv El Chavera Elevzuz, that he's obligated to someone, they owe someone else $1,000. Amnas Litten Loim Mekan Vashloshim Yoim. But the Edom say that the debt is due within 30 days. Vuoim Mekan Vashloshim. And the person says that I owe the money, but I have 10 years to pay. On them, we make evaluation. Kama Adam Ritz Alitain, V'yibiyad Elev Zuz, Beinos Mekamet Shloshim Yoim, Beinos Mekadas Hashana. How much would a person be willing to pay to hold on to the money, to hold on to a loan for a longer time? And that is the amount that the Edom have to pay. Now, when we learn the Mishnah, at first glance, we would assume that this should be considered a situation of ribis. And we know that interest is also. Why is this not considered a situation of interest? So the Rishonim give two explanations. One explanation is, ribis means that I'm paying for a loan. In other words, the fact that you're willing to lend me money and take back your money only after a while, I'm paying you interest. Here, we're not paying for that. It's not given in payment for a loan made. It's given as a penalty. And that's why it's not considered ribis. Another explanation that the Rishonim suggest is that the only time we have a situation of, that let's say I owe you money and I have the right to, and I have the due date is in a year from now. And if I come over to you and say, you know what, I'll pay you today instead of paying you in a year from now. But you should give me a discount on what I owe you. That is not considered ribis. And that is the case, of our Mishnah, where paying back earlier deserves a discount, and that's the difference that the Edom would have to pay. In fact, the Beis Yosef says a very big chiddush, that let's say someone was owed wages, and the time that the wages were due, the employer did not pay, and then he only paid later. It could well be, and somebody should discuss this question with a rav before he does this, that he has a right to make a claim that I could have earned money by having this money earlier, and you should have to perhaps pay me for that loss. Says the Gemara, But before we begin the Gemara, we know that the Torah teaches us the halach of Shemitah. And Shemitah does not only apply to fields, to the produce of fields, but Shemitah also teaches us that all loans are cancelled in the Shemitah year. Says the Gemara, Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Hamavas Chaver L'Eser Shonim, if somebody lends money to somebody else for 10 years, the halacha is, so obviously if I lend you money for 10 years, within the 10 years there's going to be a Shemitah. Shemitah Meshamtasai. The Shemitah year that comes within those 10 years will cancel the loan. V'after Gav, the has to like Kareinim by Yigosh, the Torah says, V'zeh Dvar Shemitah, Shmoit Kobal Mash Yoda Shiyash V'reyu, Loyigosh Esreyu, Ves Echov Kikor Shemitah L'Hashem. The Torah teaches us that a loan is cancelled by Shemitah, and one may not collect the loan. So here the Torah is saying that Soif also de Loyigosh, the Torah is teaching us that since Shemitah passed during this period of the 10 years that I owe you money, I may not collect the money that you owe. I may not collect the money that you owe me. Mas Rav Kahana asked Rav Kahana, if this is indeed true, our Mishnah said, that in making the Mishnah said the determination how much the Edom Zomim would have to pay, we look at how much somebody we're willing to pay instead of waiting 10 years for his money to get the money within 30 days. The Amrit, however, asks Rav Kahana, if the halacha is that Shvius Misham Tesoi, that Shvius automatically cancels all loans, Kulanami Boishlum Elei, so by them saying, by the Edom Zomim saying that the loan wasn't due in 30 days, the loan was only due in 10 years, what they wanted to accomplish was that the person would not have to pay the loan. Because as I said, within 10 years, there's certainly going to be a Shemitah. So why is the Mishnah only speak about making a calculation? They should have to pay the entire loan. Ask the Ramban, what's the Gemara's question? Couldn't we say that he could have written a prosbul? And a prosbul, we know, avoids the problem of Shemitah canceling the loan. So some Mefarshim say that the Gemara could have indeed given this teretz, and that's in fact what the Gemara does answer. Others explain that a prosbul is not always effective, because a prosbul is only effective by a milva b'shtar, and not by a milva v'peh. And our Mishnah is referring to a situation of a milva, even of a milva peh, and that's why the Gemara can't give this teretz. Furthermore, the Yamshel Shleima says, based on our Gemara, that let's say someone owes me money, and the due date is after Shemitah. Our Gemara is clearly a proof that I can't go and try to collect the money before Shemitah, with the claim that if I wait for Shemitah to pass, I'll lose my whole money. Because from here we see that that's the deal. That once somebody owes me money and the due date is only after Shemitah, I have no recourse to that money. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rava, Hachem Ma'iskinen, B'malva HaMashkin. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation where there was a mashkin in the loan, or Maisav Shteroyos Lebezdin, where even if Shemitah does not cancel such a loan. So there's a very big machloikus rishonim how to understand this Gemara. Rashi seems to learn that Malval Maisav Shteroyos Lebezdin is actually another way of saying prosbul. However, many Rishonim disagree with Rashi, and they explain the Moisesh Derois of Lebezdin and Prosbul are two separate things. For they explain, each has its own requirements. Moisesh Derois of Lebezdin requires that one actually give over the loan documents to Bezdin. And therefore, since it's now in the hands of Bezdin, that's why Shemitah doesn't cancel it, because it's not I who am attempting to collect the loan, it's Bezdin. Or it works with a concept of Hefker, Bezdin, Hefker. Because the Torah says, La Yigois, only an individual can't claim loans, but a Bezdin has the right to claim loans. However, plausible according to these Rishonim, doesn't require, as we know, that one actually hand over the loan documents to Beis Din. It requires just that the plausible be written. However, there is a chumra in a plausible that doesn't apply by Maish Shtereis LeBeis Din. By Maish Shtereis LeBeis Din, you just have to give Beis Din the actual documents. By plausible, one has to have a nusach, a version of a shtar written, with three dayonim signing it, otherwise it's not going to be considered a valid plausible. The Tanan, as the Mishnah indeed teaches us, in Masechta Shviyos, Hamava Alamashkin, or Vamaisa B'shtereis LeBeis Din Ein Meshamtin. Ikadamri, but there's a different version of this Gemara. Amar Yehuda Mishmuel, Hamava Chaver L'Shoshonim, if somebody lends money to someone else for 10 years, the halacha is, Ein Shviyos Meshamtisai. Shviyos doesn't cancel the loan. Vavgav De'osloi De'igos, Hashtemir like Kurin Ba'Ligos. We won't consider this a situation of Laigais, because it wasn't due till after Shemitah, and such a loan is not cancelled. And the Ritva says a beautiful vart. He says, certainly in a case where the due date of the loan was the year after Shemitah, it's obvious that the person wrote this loan in such a way that Shemitah shouldn't cancel the loan. The Chiddush of Al Gemara is that even if it's 10 years, so it's a while after Shemitah, so we could say that maybe that wasn't the person's intent, still the halacha is, since the due date is only after Shemitah, the halacha is that Shemitah doesn't cancel such a loan. Amrav Kahana, Afanan Namtinina. Now Rav Kahana says, our Mishnah is a riot to this opinion, because our Mishnah says, we make a calculation, what is the value of the money? If, however, the halacha were to be that Shviyas Misham Tesoy, that Shviyas cancelled all loans, then he should have to pay the entire loan, because the Edom, through their testimony, wanted to get the entire loan cancelled. So the Gemara, our mission is not a raya. Because hachem ma'iskin, amarava, hachem ma'iskinen, b'malva ala mashkin, or b'moisesh teroysu lebezdin, the Tanan, as the Mishnah teaches us, hamava ala mashkin, b'moisesh teroysu lebezdin, Shemitah doesn't cancel such a loan, and therefore it could well be that Shemitah cancels all loans. Makes no difference when the due date is. Our Mishnah is referring to a situation where somebody prevented Shemitah from affecting the loan. V'amar b'yuda mishmol. If somebody says to someone else, I'm lending you money, with the stipulation that Shemitah should not be able to cancel the loan, the halacha is Shviz Misham Tesai. It's still cancelled anyway. Ask the Gemara, Lema Kosav Shmuel, it seems that the opinion of Shmuel is that somebody who's a Masna Master Kosav Taira, somebody makes a stipulation against what the Torah says, the halacha is called Masen Shemas B'Torah to know a bottle. They ask the Gemara, is that true? That if, according to Shmuel, someone who makes a stipulation against what it says in the Torah, automatically what he says is cancelled. V'itmar, we know that Torah speaks about Einah. Einah is charging more than the right price, overcharge. That the halacha is that if the overcharge is more than a sixth, the transaction collapses. If it's exactly a sixth, the seller has to reimburse the buyer the overcharge. If it's less than a sixth, it's meaningless. And Shmuel says that if somebody says, the Gemara says, if somebody says, I'm nash ein lecha alayah no, I'm selling you something with the stipulation that I know ought not to apply. Rav Amar yesh lo v'no, v'Shmuel Rav ein lo v'no. And what is it seemed to be in the machloikus of Rav and Shmuel? That according to Shmuel, one can be masna a masha kasa b'tayra, and Rav says you can't. So how do we understand Shmuel's opinion? Hitmala Amar Avanan l'day mefarshim in the Shmuel. A manash ein lecha alayah no. If somebody says on the condition that you have no claim of I know against me, indeed that loch will be ain loy love I know, even if it wasn't overcharged, he has no right to collect it, because that was the stipulation. But if somebody says, I'm nash ain by no, I sell something to you, and I want to say, I want to emphasize how honest I am, and I say that I was honest and I didn't overcharge you anything, and then it turns out that I did overcharge, because that is what I said, and it turns out to be a mekach tos. If somebody says, I'm nashloi tishmitaini bishvius, then if the borrower agreed that even if Shemitah passes, he won't cancel the debt, and Shvius Mishamtasai. Because according to Shmuel, one is allowed to be Masna Mashikos B'Torah. However, if somebody said, I'm Nashloi Tishmetaini Shvius, Shvius Mishamtasai. Here, he didn't say that he's going to waive his right of cancellation. But he's saying that there's no din in the Torah of Shemitah. One can't say there's no din in the Torah of Shemitah, and therefore even Shmuel would agree that such a stipulation is meaningless. Tana, we learned in a Braisa. Hamavas chaveri stam. If somebody lends money to someone else, anyway, shoyle tava pach mishloshim yoyim. He can't ask for collection less than 30 days. Sava rabba babachana kameh de rav lema. Han in mili, perhaps that's only b'milva b'shtar. The light of it inish the Torah of the Kaz Shtar, because a person is not going to write a document for if he won't at least have the money for 30 days. Ava milvapet, if it's a milvapet, loy, the halach ought to be perhaps differently. Amalei Rav, so Rav said to Rav Abba Hachem Chama Chavivi, so said my uncle Rav Chia, that the halach makes no difference. Echen amalva b'shtar, v'mechem milvapet. There's a minimum of 30 days. Tanya nami hachi, and so too that we learn in the Braisa, hamavas chaveri stam, you can't collect before 30 days. Don't sit down on a chair. Or another pshat is that in earlier, the Ben Yoyada says this pshat, in earlier generations they learned standing. He's saying this halacha that we're learning now is such a great and beautiful halacha, it's like a halacha that was learned in the earlier generations. Or another pshat that I saw is that the Gemara says that when they learned something difficult, they had to sit. When they learned something easy, they could learn it standing. He said to them, you don't have to sit down for this halacha. It's such an obvious halacha, it could even be learned standing. Until you explain to me, indeed, this halacha, that this halacha applies, so the pasuk is a difficult pasuk. If the pasuk says that the seventh year is approaching, any idea, isn't it obvious that that is the shnas shmita? And ma tam alayma, why does the pasuk use the word shnas shmita? To teach us, yesh shmita chereshi kazu. There's another situation similar to shmita. Just like shmita cancels all debts, so too there's another situation where one can't approach for collection. Vezazu, hamavas chaveri stam, where somebody lent money without stipulating the amount of time that the halacha is, she'ein that he can't make a request for the money in less than 30 days. Because this is also considered a Shemitah, because the halacha is Shloshim Yom Bishana, as far as this is concerned, is considered a year. It's like the Shemitah year, and the halacha is that one cannot claim the money before 30, request the money back before 30 days. If somebody, they used to sew together on the shirt the collars, if somebody opens that up, the neck opening, he's chayiv chatas. Why is he chayiv chatas? Because he's chayiv for makabah patish, for turning this into a shirt. Maskevla Rav Kahana, ask Rav Kahana, v'chema ben zel megufas chavis, that the loch is one to cut off the top of a barrel with a sword to remove what's in the barrel on Shabbos. Why is that not considered makabah patish? Amle zechibur. When somebody sews the piece, the shirt together, with the same material, with thread that the shirt is made out, that's considered makabah patish. However, v'zeh nechibur, the top of a barrel is not considered really connected to the barrel, and therefore it's not considered makma patish when one opens up such a barrel, and so therefore it's mutter on Shabbos.